John Lennon, The Rolling Stone Interview, Part 2.
Why rock and roll?
That's the music that inspired me to play music, you know. There's nothing conceptually better than rock and roll. No group, be it Beatles, Dylan or Stones, has ever improved on Whole Lotta Shaking, for my money. And maybe I'm like our parents, you know, that's my period, I dig it, you know, and I never leave it, you know.
What do you think of the rock and roll scene today?
I don't know what it is, you know, you'd have to name it. I don't think there's...
Do you get any pleasure out of the top 10?
No, I never listen, only when I'm recording or about to bring something out, and I listen just before I record. I like about a few albums to see what people are doing, you know, if they improved any or what has anything happened. And nothing's really happened. There's a lot of great guitarists and musicians around, but nothing's happening, you know. I mean, I don't like the blood, sweat and tears shit. I think all that is bullshit, you know. And it's rock and roll is doing like jazz, as far as I can see, and the bullshitters are going off into that excellentness, which I never believed in, and others are going off. I consider myself in the avant-garde of rock and roll. I don't know, because I'm with Yoko, taught me a lot, and I taught her a lot, and I think on her album you can hear it, if I can get away from her album for a minute. And I think it's going like that, you know.
What did you think of Dylan?
I thought it wasn't much, you know. I thought it, because I expect more, you know. Maybe I expect too much from people, you know. But I expect more. You know? But I haven't been a Dylan follower since he stopped rocking, you know. I like Rolling Stone and a few things he did then, you know. I like a few things he did in the early days, but the rest of it's just like, you know, McCartney or something, you know. It's just no different, you know. It's a myth.
You don't think then that it's a legitimate new morning?
No, it's a lot of bullshit. It might be a new morning for him because he stopped singing on the top of his... How up there? And he's singing down there. I mean, it's all right, but it's nothing, you know. It doesn't mean a fucking thing. I'd sooner have... let me see what else. I'd sooner have I Hear You Knocking by Dave Edmunds at the top of England now. You went away and left me long time ago, all that.
On George's LP, you know, it's strange that he comes out with this Hare Krishna Gita LP.
Yeah, yeah.
And you come out with the opposite.
Yeah.
Thank you, react to that.
Well, I don't know. I think probably I can't imagine what George thinks, you know. But I suppose he thinks I've lost the way, you know, or something like that. But to me, I'm like home, you know. I'll never change much from this.
Let's reapproach that. Always the Beatles were talked about, and the Beatles talked about themselves in four parts of the same person.
Yeah. Well, to make that, yeah.
What's happened to those four parts?
Well, they remembered that they were four individuals. You see, we believe the Beatles myth too. You know? I don't know whether the others still believe it, but you know, we were four guys that I met. Paul said, "Do you want to join my band?" You know, and then George joined, and then Ringo joined. We were just a band who made it very, very big. That's all. You know, and sometimes our best work was never recorded. You know,
why?
Because we were performers, in spite of what Mick says about us, in Liverpool, Hamburg, and around the dance halls, you know. And what we generated was fantastic when we played straight rock. And there was nobody to touch us in Britain, you know. But as soon as we made it, we made it. The edges were knocked off. You know, Brian put us in suits and all that. And we made it very, very big, but we sold out, you know. And the music was dead before we even went on the theatre tour of Britain. We were feeling shit already, because we had to reduce an hour or 2 hours playing, which we were glad in one way, to 20 minutes and go on and repeat the same 20 minutes every night. The Beatles' music died then as musicians. That's why we never improved, you know, as musicians. We killed ourselves then to make it. And that was the end of it. And George and I are more inclined to say that, you know. We always missed the club days because that's when we were playing music. And then later on we became technically efficient recording artists, which was another thing, because competent people, you know, and we can, whatever media you put us in, we can produce something worthwhile. You know?
How do you rate yourself as a guitar musician?
Well, it depends what kind of guitarist, you know. I'm okay. You know. I'm not technically very good, but I can make it fucking howl, you know, and move. I was rhythm guitarist, you know, and it's an important job. I can make a band drive, you know.
How do you rate George?
He's pretty good, you know. I prefer myself, you know, I have to be honest, you know. I mean, I'm really very embarrassed about my guitar playing in one way, because it's very poor, you know, I can never move. But I can make a guitar speak, you know. I think there's a guy called Richie Valens, no, Richie Haven. Does he play very strange guitar, you know? He's a black guy that was on Isle of Wight concert, sang Strawberry Fields or something.
Oh, Richie Haven?
Yeah, he plays like one chord all the time. Now, he plays pretty funky guitar, but he doesn't seem to be able to play in the real time. I'm like that, you know. But Yoko's made me get cocky about my guitar, because she keeps saying...
if I play you...
Okay. See, one part of me says, yes, of course I can play, because I can make a rock move, you know. But the other part of me says, well, I wish I could just do it like B.B. King, you know. If you put me with B.B., I feel silly, you know. But I can really make I'm an artist, and if you give me a tuba, I'll bring you something out of it.
You said that you played the... You say you can make the guitar speak. What songs have you done that on?
I found out. I think it's nice. You know. It drives along, you know. I don't know, you know. Ask Eric Clapton. He thinks I can play. Ask him, you know. You don't have to... See, a lot of you people want technical... thing, then you think, oh, well, it's like wanting technical films. You know, most critics of rock and roll and guitarists are in the stage of the 50s where they wanted a technically perfect film, you know, finished for them, and then they would feel happy. I'm a cinema verite guitarist or musician, and you have to break down your barriers to be able to hear what I'm playing, you know. It's a nice little bit I played. I heard it on the back of Abbey Road. Paul gave us each a piece, you know. There's a little break where Paul plays, George plays, and I play. Well, you listen to it, you know.
Which is that?
There's one bit, one of those where it stops, you know, one of those carry that weight, and then suddenly it goes boom, boom, boom on the drums, and then we all take it in turns to play. I'm the third one on it. I have a definite style of playing. I always had, but I was overshadowed. Like, they call about George the invisible singer. I'm the invisible guitarist, you know.
You said you played the obligato on Get Back?
Oh, I played the solo on that, yeah. When Paul was feeling kind, he'd give me a solo, you know, or if he was feeling guilty that he'd had most of the A-sides or something, he'd give me a solo, you know? And I played the solo on that. I think George produces some beautiful guitar playing, you know? But I think he's too hung up to really let go, but so is Eric, really, you know? Maybe he's changed. They're all so hung up, you know? Well, we all are, that's the problem. But I really like B.B. King.
Do you like Ringo's record, his country one?
I think it's a good record. I wouldn't buy any of it, you know? I think it's a good record, and I was pleasantly surprised to hear Boku of Blues, that song, you know. I thought, good, you know, I was glad, and I didn't feel as embarrassed as I did about his first record, you know. But it's hard for you to ask me. It's like asking you, what do I think of... Ask me about other people, you know, because it looks so awful when I say I don't like this and I don't like that. It's just that I wouldn't, you know, I don't like many of the Beatles records either, you know. My own taste is different from that which I've played sometimes, which is called cop-out, you know, to make money or whatever, or because I didn't know any better.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to talk, ask you more questions about Paul, and go through that. Let me ask you this. We went
solid at
being in San Francisco.
Yes.
What was your feeling?
I felt sad, you know. Also felt that film was set up by Paul, for Paul. That's one of the main reasons the Beatles ended. You know, because I can't speak for George, but I pretty damn well know. We got fed up of being sidemen for Paul. after Brian died, that's what began to happen to us, you know. And the camera work was set up to show Paul and not to show anybody else, and that's how I felt about it. And on top of that, the people that cut it as Paul is God and we're just lying around there, you know. And that's what I felt, you know? And I knew there were some shots of Yoko and me that had been just chopped out of the film for no other reason than the people were oriented towards Engelbert Humperdinck, you know. And that's, I felt sick.
How would you trace the breakup of the Beatles?
After Brian died, we collapsed. Paul took over and supposedly led us, you know. Mm-hmm. But what is leading us when we went round in circles? We broke up then. That was the disintegration. You know. We'll be here a long time, so.
When did you first feel that the Beatles had broken up? When did first that idea first issue?
I don't remember, you know. I was in my own pain. I wasn't noticing, really. I just did it like a job, you know. The Beatles broke up, you know. After Brian died, we made the double album. It's like if you took each track off and gave it all, put all mine and all yours. It's just like I told you many times, you know, just me and a backing group, Paul and a backing group, and I enjoyed it, you know. But we broke up then, you know.
Where were you when Brian died?
We were in Wales with Maharishi. We'd just gone down after seeing his lecture the first night, and we went down to Wales and we heard it then, you know? And then we went right off into the Maharishi thing. In Wales, a place called Bangor in Wales. We were just in outside a lecture hall with Maharishi, and I can't remember, you know, it just sort of came over. Somebody came up to us, and press were there, because we'd gone down with this strange Indian, you know, and they said, Brian's dead, and I was stunned, you know, and we all were, I suppose. And the Maharishi, we went into, well, what, you know, he's dead and all that, and he was sort of saying, oh, forget it, you know, be happy, fucking idiot, you know, like parents, you know, smile. That's what Maharishi said. So, and we did, and we were along with the Maharishi trip, you know.
What was your feeling when Brian died?
The feeling that anybody has when somebody close to them dies, there's a sort of little hysterical sort of hee-hee, I'm glad it's not me, or something in it. You know, that funny feeling when somebody dies, I don't know whether you've had it, I've had a lot of people die on me, you know. Mm-hmm. And the other feeling is, you know, what the fuck, you know, what can I do, you know. I mean, I knew that we were in trouble then. I didn't really have any misconceptions about our ability to do anything other than play music. Mm-hmm. And I was scared, you know. I thought, we fucking had it now.
Would
you pass me that pepper there, the bit of it?
What were the events, you know, sort of that immediately happened after Brian died? I mean,
well, we went with Maharishi. I don't know. I remember being in Wales, and then I can't remember, you know. I mean, I'll probably have to have a bloody session to remember it. So I don't remember, you know. It just all happened, you know.
And then you went to India.
Yeah, I think so.
What about the funeral?
Oh, that was bullshit, you know. I was defended enough, I'd forgotten. You know, I didn't, it was funerals.
And how did Paul?
I don't know how the others took it. I can never tell how. No, it's no good asking me. It's like me asking how you took it, you know. I don't know. I'm in my own head, you know. I can't be in anybody else's. I don't know what George, Paul and Ringo think any more than I do about, you know. I know them pretty well, but I don't know anybody that well. You know? Yoko, I know about the best, you know. I don't know how they felt. It was in my own thing. We were all just like dazed, you know.
So Brian died, and then you said, then what happened is Paul started to take over.
Well, that's Paul. Paul. I think Paul. I don't know how much of this I want to put out, I tell you. I think Paul had an impression, he has it now like a parent, that we should be thankful for what he did, you know. But he kept for keeping the Beatles going. But when you look upon it objectively, he kept it going for his own sake, you know. But not for my sake did he, Paul struggle. But Paul made an attempt to carry on as if Brian hadn't died, you know, by saying, now, boys, we're going to make a record. You know, and being the kind of person I am, I thought, well, you know, we're going to make a record, all right. So I went along, we went and made a record. And I suppose we made Pepper, I'm not sure, you know.
That was before.
Well, that was before Brian. Oh, I see. Well, we made the double album then. Mm-hmm. But it was like that, you know, I mean, and then, was Magic Little Mystery Tour after Brian? Yeah, well, that was the real... See, I think Paul had a tendency to come along and say, well, he's written his 10 songs, let's record now. And I said, well, give us a few days, and I'll knock a few off, you know, or something like that. Magic Little Mystery Tour was another where he'd set it up, you know, and then he did worked it out with Mal, and then he came and showed me what his idea was, and this is how it went. It went around like this, the story, and he had it all, you know, I think, production, and he says, well, here's the segment, you write a little piece for that. And I thought, fucking hell, I've never made a film. What do you mean? He said, write a script. So, you know, I ran off and wrote the dream sequence for the fat woman and all the thing with the spaghetti and all that. And all that. It was like that, you know. And then we were all, George and I were sort of grumbling, you know, fucking movie. You know, well, we'd better do it. You know, a feeling that we owed the public or owed somebody other that we should do these things. You know. So we made it, you know.
When did your songwriting partnership with Paul end?
That ended, I don't know, around 1962 or something, I don't know. I mean, if you give me the albums, I can tell you exactly who wrote what, you know, and which line. I mean, we sometimes wrote together and sometimes didn't, but all our best work, apart from the early days, like I Want to Hold Your Hand, we wrote together and things like that, we wrote apart always, you know. Even Liverpool, one after 909 on the What's It LP, it's one I wrote when 17 or 18 in Liverpool, separately from Paul, and some of his, I don't know, The Sun Is Fading Away and things like that, were things Paul wrote those days. We always wrote separately, but we wrote together because we enjoyed it a lot sometimes, and also because they'd say, well, you're going to make an album, we'd get together and knock off a few songs, you know, just like a job.
Whose idea was to go to India?
Well, I don't know. Probably George's. I've no idea. You know. No. We met around then, but I was going to take it, but I lost my nerve because I was going to take my wife and Yoko, and I didn't know how to work it. You know, so I didn't do it. I didn't quite do it.
Sexy Sadie wrote that.
That's about Maharishi. You know. I copped out and wouldn't write Maharishi. What have you done? You made a fool of everyone. But now it can be told, fab listeners.
When did you realize that he was making a fool of you?
I don't know. I just sort of saw him, you know.
While in India, when he got back?
Yeah, somebody said, you know, there was a big hullabaloo about him raping Mia Farrow and all, trying to get off with Mia Farrow and a few other women and things like that. And we went down to him and we'd stayed up all night discussing was it true or not true, you know. And when George started thinking it might be true, well, I thought, well, it must be true, because if George is doubting it, there must be something in it. So we went to see Maharishi. The whole gang was the next day charged down to his hut, you know, his bungalow, his very rich-looking bungalow in the mountains. And I was the spokesman. As usual, when the dirty work came, I actually had to be leader, whatever the scene was. When it came to the nitty-gritty, I had to do the speaking. And I said, we're leaving. Why? Me? You know, all that shit. And I said, well, if you're so cosmic, you'll know why. You know, because he was always intimating, and there were all these, his right-hand men intimating that he did miracles, you know. And I was saying, you know why? You know. He said, I don't know why, you must tell me. And I just kept saying, and he gave me a look like, oh, kill you bastard. He gave me such a look, and I knew then when he looked at me, you know, because I'd called his bluff. If you know all, you know, cosmic conscious, that's what we're all here for. And I was a bit rough to him, you know.
You were expecting too much from him.
I always do, you know. I always expect too much. I always expect in my mother and don't get her. That's what it is, you know, or some parents. I know that much.
So when did you decide you had to come to New York and announce him?
Denounce him?
Well, you came to New York and had the press conference.
The Apple thing, that was to announce Apple. That
but also at the same time.
I don't remember that.
The Maharishi.
Well, what did I say? I don't know. You know, I mean, we all say a lot of things that we don't know what we're talking about. I'm probably doing it now. I don't know what I said. You know, See, everybody takes you up on the words you said in 1940. I'm just a guy who people ask what about things. I blab off, and some of it makes sense, some of it's bullshit, and some of it's lies, and some of it's God knows what I'm saying, you know. I don't know what I said about Maharishi. All I know is he said about Apple, which is worse, you know.
All right.
Clive Epstein, or some other such business freak, came up to us and said, you've got to spend so much money or the tax will take it. We're thinking of opening some retail, wasn't record shop, chain of retail clothes or some barmy thing like that. And we were all muttering about, well, if we're going to have to open a shop, let's open something we're interested in. You know, and we went through all these different ideas about this, that and the other, and we ended up with the... Paul had a nice idea about opening up a white house where it would sell white china and things like that, everything white, you know, because you can never get anything white, you know, which is pretty groovy. And that it didn't end up with that. It ended up with Apple with all this junk and the Fool and all their stupid clothes and all that. You know. And then...
When did you decide to close that down?
I don't know. I was controlling the scene at the time. You know, I mean, I was the one going in the office and shouting about Paul had done it for 6 months. I walked in and changed everything. But there were all the Peter Browns were reporting behind me back to Paul, saying, hey, you know, John's doing this and he's doing that. And like, John's crazy. I was always the one that was must be crazy because I wouldn't let him have status quo. And I came up with, was it my idea or yours? Well, we came up with the idea to give it all away and stop fucking about with psychedelic clothes shop. So we gave it all away.
Were you there putting it away?
No, we read it in the papers. That was when we started events. I learned events from Yoko. No, events we did. We made everything into an event from then on and got rid of it.
When you gave away your MBE, gave it back.
Yeah. I'd been planning on it for over a year and a bit, you know. I was waiting for the time to do it.
You said then that you were waiting to tag it to some event and then you realized that it was an event in it.
Yeah, that's the truth.
You also said at that time that you had another thing you were going to do.
I don't know what it was.
Do you remember?
Yeah, I do. We had some. Well, we always kept them on the toes, you know, during our events period. I don't know. We said, well, we got some other surprise for them later. Mm. I can't remember what it was. Maybe we were getting married. No, we were married. I don't know.
You mean after the baby? Then?
After the MBE, we said we probably intimated that we had another surprise event coming up shortly.
Well, probably that was the war is over.
Probably the war is over poster event, maybe.
Still, so to go back to Apple, so to break up with the Beatles, and Brian died, went to India.
I didn't really want to do all this, you know. Go on. Well, we're halfway through it now, so let's do it.
You said you quit the Beatles first.
Yeah.
How?
Well, I said to Paul, I'm leaving. We were in Apple, and I just... On the way over to... I knew before I went to Toronto, I told Alan I was leaving. I told Eric Clapton and Klaus that I was leaving and I'd like to probably use them as a group, you know. I hadn't decided how to do it, to have a permanent new group or what. And then later on I thought, fuck it, I'm not going to get stuck with another set of people, you know, whoever they are. So, but I announced it to myself and to the people around me on the way to Toronto a few days before, and on the plane Alan came with me. I told Alan, you know, it's over. And then when I got back, there was a few meetings, and Alan had said, well, cool it, because there was a lot to do, you know, business-wise. It wouldn't have been suitable at the time, you know. And then we were discussing something in the office with Paul, and Paul said something or other, like to do something, and I kept saying no to everything he said, you see. So it came to a point I had to say something. You know, Paul said, well, what do you mean? And so I said, I mean, the group's over, I'm leaving. And but Alan was he'll remember exactly, and she will. This is how I see it. Alan was saying, "Don't tell." He didn't want me to tell Paul, even, you know. And but I couldn't help, so I told her it's out, you know, I couldn't stop it, it came out. And Paul and Alan said they were glad that I wasn't going to announce it, that I was going to make an event out of it, you know. Right? But Paul and Alan both, I don't know whether Paul said don't tell anybody, but he was damn pleased that I wasn't, you know. He said, oh, well, that means nothing really happened if you're not going to say anything. So that's what happened. Well, I mean, like anybody, when you say divorce, you know, the face goes all sorts of colours. It's like he knew all, really, that this was the final thing, you know. And then 6 months later, he comes out with whatever, you know. I told Ray Conley, so there's a lot of people knew I'd left, but I was a fool not to do it, you know. Not to do what Paul did, which is use it to sell a record.
You were really angry with Paul.
No, I wasn't angry.
Well, when he came out with his I'm leaving.
Well, I wasn't angry. I was just, shit! You know, I mean, he's a good PR man, Paul. I mean, he's about the best in the world, probably. You know? He really does a job. I wasn't angry in that way. We were all hurt that he didn't tell us that what he was going to do. But I think he claims that he didn't mean that to happen, but that's bullshit. He called me in the afternoon of that day and said, I'm doing what you and Yoko were doing
last year.
And I said, good, you know. Because the time last year, they were all looking at us too, as if we were strange, trying to make a life together and doing other things than being fab, fat myths. So he rang me up that day and said, I'm doing what you and Yoko are doing and putting out an album, and I'm leaving the group too, he said. I said, good, you know, I was a little, you know, feeling a little strange because he was saying it this time, you know, although it was a year later. And I said, well, I said, good, you know, that's it. You know, because he was the one that wanted the Beatles most. You know. And then the Midnight Papers came out, you know.
And
I was cursing because I hadn't done it.
He certainly sold a record that virtually didn't have any message in it. You know, it's one of those.
Well, you don't have to have a message in a record, but he just did a great hype, you know. I wanted to do it, you know. I should have done it. I think, damn shit, what a fool I was. But there were many pressures at that time. I think Northern Songs, all that was going. It would have upset the whole thing if I'd have said that.
When you found out that James had sold his shirt,
I was pissed off. You know.
You feel betrayed?
Sure do, you know. I mean, he's another one of them people, a bit like Martin, who think they made us, you know. And they didn't. I'd like to hear Dick James' music, and I'd like to hear George Martin's music, please. Just play me some. And Dick James actually has said that, you know, that he made us. They people are under a delusion that they made us, you know.
How did Dick James tell you, well, I'm
He didn't tell us, he did it. It was just a fait accompli, you know. He went and sold his thing to Lou Grade. And that's all we knew. We read it in the paper, I think, you know.
What was that part about with Lou Grade?
That was fantastic, you know. It was like this room full of old men smoking and fighting, you know, deciding on playing. It's great. I mean, people seem to think businessmen like Alan Oldgrade or any of them are a race apart. They play the game the way we play music, you know, and it's something to see, you know. They play a game, you know. Then they have ritual and they create, you know, like Alan is a very creative guy, you know. He creates situations which create positions for them to move in. They all do it, you know. And it was a sight to see, you know. And we played our part. We both did.
What did you do?
Well, with the bankers and things like that, I think Alan will tell you better, because I don't know. I forget Frightman at all. Everything seems as though it's going to be trouble, you know. Like, you can't say anything about anybody because you get sued or something. So you can check Alan with that. He'll tell you what we did.
Well,
you know. I did a great... Well, no, I don't know. I did a job on this banker, you know, that we were using Ormrod, that's all. And a few other people, and on the Beatles. Well, how do you describe the job, you know? My job, I maneuver people, you know, that's what leaders do, you know? And I make situations in which benefit to me with other people. It's as simple as that.
Oh, I think we should cut that out.
Why?
That's the way you always feel, but actually you're You can never.
I am maneuvered too. Yeah, well, okay, but you know, I had to do a job to get Alan in Apple.
Exactly.
I did a job, so did you.
You do it with instinct, you know.
Well, it doesn't matter. God, Yoko, don't say that. Maneuvering is what it is. Let's not be coy about it. It's a deliberate and thought out maneuver of how to get a situation how we want it. That's how life's about, isn't it? Is it not?
How did you go back?
Is it?
Well, you're a pretty instinctive guy. Yeah.
But instinctive doesn't matter. So is Alan. So is Dick James. So is Gray. They're all instinctive. So is he. I mean, it's instinct, but it's maneuvering. There's nothing ashamed about it. We all do it. It's just owning up. You know, not going around saying, God bless you, Brother Hari, fucking Krishna, and doing it, pretending there's no interest.
You see, the difference is that you don't go to Alan and bush it and get him. But you just instinctively says that Alan is the guy.
No, but
you
jump
into it and you just get.
But that's not the thing. The point I'm talking about is creating a situation around Apple and the Beatles in which Alan could come in.
Yes, right.
That
right.
is what I'm talking about. And he wouldn't have got in unless I'd done it.
Right.
And
that's true.
And he wouldn't have got in unless you'd done it. You made the decision too.
How did you get Alan?
The same as I get anything I want, you know. I mean, the same as you get what you want. I'm not telling you. Just work at it and get on the phone and a little word here and a little word there and do it, you know.
What was Paul's reaction?
See, a lot of people, all those Dick James and the Derek Taylors and Peter Brown, all of them, you know, they think they're the Beatles and Neil and all of them. Well, I say, fuck them. You know, and they all, after working with Genius for 10, 15 years, begin to think they're it, you know. So they're not.
Do you think you're Genius?
Yes. If there's such a thing as one, I am one, you know.
When did you first realize?
When I was about 12, you know. I used to think, I must be a genius, but nobody's noticed. And I thought, well, I'm a genius or I'm mad. Which is it? I said, I can't be mad because nobody's put me away, therefore I'm a genius. I mean, genius is a form of madness, and we're all that way, you know. But I used to be a bit coy about it, like my guitar playing, you know. If there's such a thing as genius, which is just what? What the fuck is it? I am one, you know. And if there isn't, I don't care, you know. But I used to think when I was a kid, you know, writing me poetry and doing me paintings. I didn't become something when the Beatles made it or when you heard about me. I've been like this all my life. Genius is pain, too. It's just pain, you know.
How do you feel towards the Beatles?
Who? The Apple?
The Apple. Yeah. I mean, you talked about Mal and Derek.
I didn't mention Mal. I said Neil, Peter Brown, and Derek. They live in a dream of Beatle past, and everything they do is oriented to that. They also have a warped view of what was happening, you know? And,
I mean, they must feel now that their lives are just inextricably bound up in noise.
Well, they have to grow up then, you know, because they've only had half their life. They've got another whole half to go, and they can't go on pretending to be Beatles. That's where it's at, you know. They don't know. They don't. I mean, when they read it, they think it's crack, John, if it's in the article. But that's what it's at. They live in the past, you know.
You traveled to Toronto with Derek, right?
Yeah.
And also did a bed piece with Derek.
That was the same thing, yeah. Well, then I was living in the past, too, then.
I was reading
See, I presumed that I would just be able to carry on and just bring Yoko into our life, but it seemed that I had to be married to them or Yoko, and I chose Yoko, you know, and I was right.
What were their reactions when you first brought Yoko by?
And they despised her, you know.
From the very beginning?
Yeah, right. And they insulted her, and they still do.
The Beatles.
Yeah, they don't even know I can see it. And even when it's written down, it looks like I'm just paranoid or she's paranoid, but I know, you know, just by the way that publicity on us was handled in Apple, all the 2 years we were together, and the attitude of people to us, and the bits we hear from the office girls, and we know, you know, so they can go stuff themselves.
In the beginning, you were too much in love to notice.
Yeah, we were in our own dream, you know. But I mean, They're the kind of idiots that really think that Yoko split the Beatles. Probably, or Alan, you know. It's the same joke, you know. They're that insane about Alan, too.